Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me on the latest Morecast. Is this the Morecast or CSG? Whatever. Anyway, well, joining me on this podcast that I do, joining me today to celebrate, denigrate, and do whatever we need to do for the Nuggets trade deadline is basically now someone who I should start paying to be on this podcast is my friend, the loquacious Tim Miller. Hello, sir.
Yeah, I'm going for the Cousin Sal role here on this podcast. I think Cousin Sal ends up getting paid now at this point. He should be, right? I'm not going to shake you down, but I'm happy to be here. I've got a lot of feelings and emotions about the trade deadline I want to share. We've been doing this, whatever, quarterly now, bi-yearly, whatever it is.
About three times a year, yeah. we have a podcast.
Every trimester.
We do. Okay, so I should clarify here. This is the Bulwark's Tim Miller, and he just recently wrote a book called Why We Did It. Obviously better than my title, which would be Why Me Did It, which is probably why I don't write books. It's available on Amazon. It's available wherever you get your books. Barnes & Noble, I was going to say Borders, but no Borders no longer exists. So it's just everywhere you find your books, go get Tim's book. And it was a bestseller. I can't talk about that enough. I have a best-selling author friend, which is a feather in the cap for me. Tim,
I appreciate that. I'm happy that the accolades are kind of just spreading around me in like a little circle. Everyone that I touch feels like they're accoladed as well. I appreciate that.
I just want some of your glow. That's all I want.
I love that.
So we're here to talk about the Nuggets trade deadline. And to sum up, the Nuggets traded Davon Reed and three unprotected second round picks to the Los Angeles Lakers to get Thomas Bryant, who was a backup center who was getting minutes. And then he was not quite out of the rotation, but was getting there with the Lakers. Famously, he was in boxing out and asking for the ball on LeBron's record-breaking shot to become the NBA's all-time leading scorer, which is the funniest picture I've ever seen. And so that is him, have that fame. So if you've seen that picture, that's Thomas Bryant. The Nuggets also traded Bones Highland to the Los Angeles Clippers for two unprotected second round picks. And so that's it. That's literally all the Nuggets did. And so, Tim, top line for you, what was your thoughts coming away from that?
It was pretty big downer, to be honest. I think that yesterday for me was Just an emotional reaction about as down as I've been about the Nugs since Jamal's ACL injury. You know, because it's been all uphill since then. Slow uphill, slow recovery, of course, for Jamal. But I think, you know, with a night to sleep on it, maybe that was an overreaction. The Nuggets' lackluster, lackadaisical performance in Orlando didn't really help the kind of vibes and the mood around the team after the trade deadline, I don't think. So I think those things kind of piled on each other. As far as, you know, the maybe a more thoughtful response here a day later, still a little disappointing, but not. It's not devastating. I mean, the rotation for what was the playoff rotation really didn't change, right? I mean, Bones was not going to be in the playoff rotation in any meaningful way. Right. So the disappointment comes with, well, there was some hope that we could get more. There's some hope that we could get more from Bones, you know, going forward, right? That like just to like and just to get rid of him for nothing, that right. stings. Then with Phoenix getting KD, which we'll be able to talk about, I think that there was maybe a feeling that there was a little more required from this trade deadline in order mm-hmm. to take advantage of this magical Jokic year and this little window. So like those two factors played into it, but like as a practical matter, the rotation didn't really change. Bryant, I think, we can talk about Bryant more in depth, but I think that's the only way that it did change in certain matchups. I think he'll be much more useful than DeAndre Jordan was, right? So it's a little bit additive. Probably Bryant's probably more likely to get playoff minutes than Bones would have been, right? So in some ways, there is a marginal addition. But, you know, a little bit frustrating because I think that we wanted there to be more. I would have loved, you know, you're looking at that Clippers trade and you're like, man, 2 seconds, like we couldn't get one of their wings who isn't playing, you know, you couldn't get a Robert Covington out of that. Somebody that, you know, again, isn't going to change the complexion of this team, but could we get somebody that could play 8 minutes against KD in a playoff series and have one more defender to throw at him instead of 2 seconds? That would have been nice. A roster spot did get opened up. So I think potentially there could be a buyout person. We can talk about that. So that's my main thing. And I guess my final other big picture take is that, I do feel like Calvin's playing a little bit with fire. Like this is now a very tight rotation. You know, there's not really a ton of room for, you know, filling, you know, next man up if there's an injury, particularly on the wing, particularly on the full, you know, particularly on the wing, right? So if you lose a Porter for a playoff series, like all of a sudden you are really, really thin now with this team as far as people that can defend KD in particular, but also as scoring options, right? And so that's the thing that worries me the most. Like, is this 8-9, whatever you call it, man unit still as good as it was on Monday? Yep, maybe a little bit better, but in a year that you really hope that this could be the year, you know, they didn't leave a lot of room for error and they didn't really do anything to kind of shore up any of the areas of concern. So that's my big picture. That's my more reasoned, not emotional, want to cut myself take, which was yesterday afternoon. Had we taped this podcast yesterday afternoon? How about you?
You did very good. I mean, I kind of wish we would have done this yesterday afternoon, though, because I think the fiery takes for me in particular would have been big. Here's my top line. Calvin Booth has made a couple critical mistakes that you didn't think they would be mistakes at the time, but now are coming back home to roost. First of which was selecting Peyton Watson with the second first round pick they had this year. They completely wasted a roster spot. There's just no way to get around that. They have a player they never intended to play this year who was a project guy who is taking up a roster spot. I mean, if they would have selected him in the second round, he had no guaranteed roster spot, and they could have kept him at in the G League all year, maybe put him on a two-way, who knows. But that critical mistake caused them to have to try to free up a roster spot for the buyout market, which in turn is basically why, I would say the only reason why Davon Reed, who wasn't contributing at all, basically, why they have to get rid of him and then get rid of Bones. This well, and they got Colin Gillespie, who is, you know, second round pick and doesn't, is not get quote unquote guaranteed a roster spot on the Nuggets. That's number one. Number two.
And can I just add one really quick thing that's on the Peyton Watson thing? That's another element to that.
Yeah.
Because I think Calvin's been great, but this is a really fair nitpick or legit complaint, actually, not a nitpick. The other thing that they gave up in that deal is a 27 first.
Right.
You know, and right. So again, now it's like, well, with Bones and a first, could you have been able to get something else, right? Like something that might be more useful in a playoff series. They didn't have any first to trade. So again, I think that Watson thing was kind of a double whammy, right? It's the roster spot, and because of the way the stepping rule or whatever it is, where you can't trade in consecutive years, that they were handcuffed on their firsts. So you lose a roster spot and a first as an asset. So I think that that really kind of hamstrung them, you know, from two directions there.
Well, and mostly because they used, you rarely see a contending team use two first round picks on young players. That's a very rare thing. Usually they're trade bait, right? And it was fascinating to see the Nuggets do this and then do it on and use one of the picks on a player who is never going to play. And there's where my frustration lies. Secondly, is the Bones deal. And I will get into my very big frustration with the infrastructure around the Denver Nuggets in relation to this. But with Bones, his value went from very good to nada within a week to 2 weeks. And most of that's on Bones and some of that is on the Denver Nuggets. And they did not help things in this regard. And where I believe they messed up was the last 2 weeks, the perception was they were trying to trade him. They completely lost all their leverage. Bones was obviously projecting that he wanted to be traded. It was a confluence of circumstances that I will get into later that created the situation that the Nuggets were in, where they had to essentially salary dump him to the Los Angeles Clippers. This is what that trade was. This was, and a, you know, they're trying to spin it as addition by subtraction,
a roster dump. Which is
basically, it's like Bones, your $2 million is no longer on this roster. You know, Thomas Bryant probably will not re-sign with this team later. So the Nuggets are basically saving themselves $4 million here, $5 million. So if you go on by that metric, that's good. Thomas Bryant may or may not contribute. I don't even know how much Michael Malone will play him. That's going to come out in the wash. We do not know. As I think they know, we know by now that he tends to prefer Zeke and the versatility he has with Blacko. But we saw something last night that I want to get into, which is that second unit, even with Jamal, has a hard time scoring. And it is not exactly what you would call an offensive unit. It is very much a Michael Malone trust defensive unit. Nuggets didn't help themselves in that way. However, top line, Tim, the Nuggets didn't hurt themselves. In relation to what the Phoenix Suns did and getting Kevin Durant, everything is colored by that now. And I think you and I will admit our perception of yesterday was colored by the Durant move
obviously. Yeah.
I mean, both of you and I are thinking like, oh fuck, this is like, how? I mean, like Durant is the unguardable, and unless you have Jason Tatum, and this has been an issue that the Nuggets have always had with Kevin Durant. You're like, okay, that's a problem.
Nuggets struggled to guard Brandon Ingram,
right?
You know, who like is a homeless man's version of Durant, right? And so, like, I mean, that tells you, right? And again, that goes to the trade thing yesterday, where it's like, well, at least there's Covington, there's Boston, right? There's somebody in the Clippers, right? Is there something to do there? Because Gordon, well, I no one can guard Kevin Durant, right? So there's that. But I mean, Gordon could be at least serviceable. But the problem is there's a difference between just acknowledging that Durant is kind of an ungarnable unicorn, which is true, and saying, okay, but still there's a difference between having somebody that like can plausibly slow him down and not having anyone. And the Nuggets have one person, Aaron Gordon, that plausibly can. And so he's got to play every minute with Durant. And there's no, if he gets in foul trouble, if he tweaks a knee, like there's nobody. You know, this is to use as a Jokic parallel, the Clippers, right, added Plumlee yesterday, which is like not, you wouldn't think that's a huge add, but as you look at their matchup with Jokic, they go from being a team that has nobody that can even plausibly guard Jokic and that Jokic just eats them up completely to now they've got Zubac and Plumlee. At least you can throw some bodies at them. Maybe you can slow it down. And I think the Nuggets still own the Clippers, but right. I mean, that's what you're hoping for is there anything you can do just on the margins to help slow them down? And the Nuggets don't like, that's an area of weakness for them. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it doesn't look, I don't think that the buyout market is the place to solve that.
No. The buyout market, unless Danny Green gets bought out by, Houston. I mean, unless he gets bought out there.
Danny Green's not guarding Kevin Durant. I mean, he can play a couple minutes of the offense. That solves some of your other issue right here with losing Bones, to your point, is the bench scoring. Even with Jamal is a problem. And so, you know, could Danny Green, you know, maybe be at least in one game or two games in a playoff series an injection of offense? Sure. Like, that's probably worth looking into because, you know, the lineup as it is going to really struggle to score. Now, again, I don't think Bones was going to play. And I think if we got to a point in the series where the bench was struggling to score so much that Bones was playing, then Nuggets were probably on a path to an L in that series anyway.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
Still, it's a reality that you kind of dumped your only bench scoring and replaced it with nothing. Yeah, at some level, when I saw the Thomas Bryant news, I thought, man, maybe they are sticking with Bones because that bench unit could have probably put up some points. It would have been a bigger defensive liability, but at least you'd have had an option to go to a bench unit that could score if you had Bones and Bryant in a rim running pick and roll. That you know, conceivably, that could have at least created some offense. Now, huge sacrifice on defense, obviously, the Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, you know, Flacco, Zeke, whatever defense is going to be much, much superior.
I mean, some of this is nitpicky, and I'm not going to sugarcoat my emotions here because we saw a seismic trade, and that doesn't happen. 9 times out of 10, the deadline has some okay and good trades, but nothing like Kevin Durant going from the Brooklyn Nets to the Phoenix Suns. That obviously is not something that you can count on every single year in the NBA. So I'm fully cognizant of that. And I'm also cognizant of the fact that it takes teams a while to gel. And this might not be a situation. I mean, it took the Warriors probably about, I don't know, 25 games to figure out how to play with Curry and Durant back when he went there in 2016. So.
But by the way, nitpicking. I mean, a Suns Nuggets series could be a series that's decided by a couple points.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I nitpicking, I hear you. Yeah. Yes, we're nitpicking. And yes, you know, our rage yesterday was probably a little overcooked. Yes. But still, the reality is the reality. The Suns picked up Kevin fucking Durant. And, you know, maybe they, you know, and when you have these windows, you know, maybe you do need to do something around the edges that might only help on the margins, but that might be a meaningful margin, you know, if you know, it comes down to a 7-game playoff series against them.
Yeah. And we'll see, because the Nuggets are what, 4 games up still in on first in the West. Their schedule gets a lot tougher after the All-Star break. And we'll see what kind of effect that has post All-Star break. I didn't like the vibe of the team last night. It was over it and exhausted, and Jokic had like 8-9 turnovers. It was insane. It was just, they didn't look like themselves. They looked like a team that was sick of the deadline, you know, and that happens. I always call it deadline hangover, but at the same time, I'm not going to put too much weight into it because obviously of those factors. My issues largely are based on the fact that even before this, I had Ryan Blackburn on the podcast on Monday, and he calls it the Midwest, and because it was largely mediocre conference before the trade deadline. Unfortunately, a bunch of teams got better at the deadline. Even the Clippers, you know, they made a couple deals. They got Mason Plumlee, which I can tell you the Nuggets did have their eye on. They did have their eye on, and I think Plumlee would have made a significant difference if they were able to get him. But the conference got better, and the Nuggets added Thomas Bryant, and the margin for error got a lot thinner. And I think that's the best way that you and I can probably look at this, is that the moves that were made behind them were significant enough to make the conference that much more difficult going forward.
Yeah. And, you know, again, there were some other people on the market, you know, I mean, the Sixers, for example. You know, upgrade from Matisse Thybulle to Jalen McDaniels. Jalen McDaniels is the type of guy that I think, again, on the edges would have helped in the Nuggets rotation off this bench where there's going to be big scoring droughts. Somebody that's a dynamic wing. And he's not guarding KD either, right? None of these are the magic pill for, you know, solving KD. But, that is the other part that's just a little bit frustrating. It's like I think that what is undergirding all this is not only did the rest of the conference because I was worried that Memphis and New Orleans were going to make big moves too, or the Kings even could have made a big move, and none of them really did. So, you know, some of the Suns were really the main one, and you know, on the margins, the LA teams got better. But you know, so what's undergirding this is, yes, the Suns get better, but also, I mean, I don't know, man. We text all the time during these games. I mean, this team was feeling like this was going to be the year for the finals. I mean, the West was wide open. The Nuggets were playing so well and together. You know, it just was one of those things where like everything was clicking early in the year. There were these bad wins. You know, the record was good, but the wins didn't feel good. Like for the last month or 6 weeks, like the wins have felt really good. You know, the schedule has been pretty tough. Actually, it's been a lot of home games, but really high level competition. They've had a lot of wins against really strong teams that you would see in the playoffs. So that gives you confidence. It's like, oh yeah, we can win at home against Memphis. Right. We can win at home against Celtics, right? We can win at home against these good teams. And so when you see that, and this is a team that's never been to the finals, right? That us long suffering fans, you know, just like the two times we've been in the Western Conference Finals, it's like the bubble. And then, you know, against that amazing, you know, Lakers, Kobe, Gasol team, we could go back and relive all that. Like maybe we should have, could have been able to win that series, but still, it never really felt like at least during my Nuggets fandom, I've never felt like, I really think we kind of not only could, but should make the finals, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then to go from that to having this big KD move hanging over you, understanding that KD and CP3 are old, understanding that it takes time to gel. You know, it's not like we're dead now, but you want to do everything you can when you got this chance, right? You want to just do everything you can when the lane looks so open for you, and it kind of feels like that. That isn't what they did, right?
Right.
And that's the frustrating part.
Well, I think that some of this
the Bones thing, not finding a role too, it makes you frustrated at Bones. It's like, man, why are you such an ass about all this? Like, there's several people around that it's kind of like, man, it's a little bit of a downer. Like, this should be, you know, the magic season.
I think there's a difference in reactions to people who have been Nuggets fans for a long time, like you and me, and people who probably came on board in the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe even less than that. I have to acknowledge, at least for myself, that I get influenced by extraneous things like most Nuggets fans do, because there's always that waiting for the shoe to drop thing that we have. Like, there's always going to be something that happens. And the Durant move felt like a something that happened. You know, it was just like, oh, Jesus. I'm like, we're just there. And you start getting frustrated. That was a little bit of yesterday. And that's not so much today. My frustrations today center around the groupthink that we create. Tim and I speak frequently, as he pointed out. And he'll hear things that I'm not allowed to repeat publicly. And I got to thinking about this in relation to Bones and what happened and all the stuff that I was hearing about and all this stuff that was not reported on relentlessly because I'm not technically Nuggets media anymore. And I got to thinking, is this really a win? It's not necessarily a negative, but is this really a win? Do we have to set a narrative that is about the team succeeding in getting 2 second round picks for a guy they selected in the first round? I can't set that in my mind, and maybe it's me returning to a fan. So maybe I'm relying on you as my counselor here, but it's like, is there a way that we can like logically look at something like this and say, it wasn't a win. It's not fatal. It's not bad. But we can't spend 2 second round picks for a first round pick that you had all a bunch of hopes in like a year and a half after you draft him as some sort of victory for the team.
Well, no. And the Bones thing follows a classic sports spin cycle. We do this in politics too, right? Campaign manager gets fired. Campaign's not going well. Campaign manager gets fired. And it's like, ooh, you know, and then after the day two story is, ooh, what you guys didn't know behind the scenes is that it was the campaign manager who made these bad calls, right?
Or the strategy,
you know? Yeah, it's your post game thing. And you get that in sports too, right? Bones gets traded. And it's like, ooh, now we can tell you just how much of a cancer he was in the locker room, just how bad his attitude was when he got benched. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I believe that, but you know, you can't tell me not to believe my lying eyes. I mean, Bones and Jamal, you know, which is what underlies all this, that like they just couldn't make it work. And maybe they couldn't make it work on the court. I don't know, but they're sitting on the bench laughing with each other the last two games. I mean, they can't hate each other that much. We've seen bench vibes where the people actually hate each other, you know, maybe they're faking it a little bit, but okay, it seems like you can fake it till you make it. You don't have to love every coworker you have. Maybe the program could have worked more if there was a different person staggering with him, right? Maybe it was an on-court thing. It's not just Bones and Jamal, right? Like, could Bones and Aaron Gordon and you know, could that have worked? Maybe it couldn't have worked. I don't know. They didn't feel like they really tried that. You know, isn't it? The guy's only been here a year and a half. I mean, isn't it Malone's obligation and Jokic and the leaders on the team to be like, bro, we're first in the West. Like, chill out. Like, it's cool. You're going to get minutes. You're on a 4-year deal. Like, it'd be one thing if it was like Bones a free agent this year. He's pissed. He needs his minutes. He's got to get paid. You know, he's got to pay, you know. I get that. Sports is a business. But that wasn't the case. He's in year two. Yeah. You know, he's got another year and then whatever, a team or a player option. I forget which one. But so there's two more years on the contract. So, I mean, you can't just talk him into like, can we buy in, get a championship here? You can be a spark plug off the bench. And so, you know, like we said, this bench team unit doesn't have any offense. Some nights it's not going to be working. You're not going to play every night. I'm sorry. We get it. That sucks. But, you know, you're year two. Or maybe they trade him at the end of the year, right? Like it definitely doesn't. And, you know, it doesn't feel like the options were exhausted and it doesn't feel like they maximized the asset management here. Right. And some of that's on Bones, right? Storming off the court, not coming back. Some of that's on Bones. And some of that is kind of like Calvin and Malone and all them got put in a shit situation. I get that. But like some of it's also on the org to try to make it work, you know? And so I don't think that you're wrong that like it's hard to spin this as just a positive, especially when you look at the salary situation you're talking about as a salary dump. But like we need people on bone style contracts. Right. We've got three max guys, you know, like you need people on those contracts and you had them for another couple of years. So no, it's not good. Again, does it really matter as far as the playoffs? Probably not. I wouldn't say definitely not, but probably not, you know, because Bones probably wasn't going to play. But it still is not great. It's still no. you can't pitch it as addition, but it's only addition by subtraction if you're making it on the theory of like Bones would have been an active cancer on the bench, and maybe it would have been. I don't know, but like, but I can just tell you him and Jamal are laughing yesterday. So I don't know.
Here's my thing. A couple things I'm going to reveal to people here. From what I knew, Bones's frustration began long before he stormed off the court, and it really, really, the crux of it was the stagger with Jamal, where he and Singer did actually comment on this on his in his article.
He mentioned in the article,
where he's talking about how the stagger with Jamal pretty much caused Bones to not be the player that he was before. People have likened this to the Yusuf Nurkić thing. Let me tell you something about the Yusuf Nurkić thing. That was poor management by Malone in that case. The communication was terrible. And Nurkić made his own bed, became a big baby, and all that stuff. And a lot of that was different, but the similarities are walking off the court and trying to leave at halftime and all that stuff. Those were the similarities. The difference here was Bones was unlike Nurkić, who after that was basically exiled to a farthest, the darkest corner. Bones was on the bench and did get in a couple games after that, after Malone came back. But the frustration was, and if we're going to boil it down to it, between Jamal and Bones. And when it breaks down like that, it's always going to go to the guy who has been here longer and is the star. That is where the origin is. That's where the start is. That is where the frustration on Bones' part originated. And then that spun out into greater locker room frustrations. It was a cascading series of events that suddenly got worse when Bones left the court. And obviously you got to do something after that, Bones leaving. But as far as the public, by the way, up until that point, no one knew. No one had any clue. No one had any idea there was frustrations behind the scenes, particularly from Bones's part.
Right.
And obviously David Adelman being the coach at the time, and him, basically he made a couple decisions that were pretty brash for an interim coach. Benched Mike for a fourth quarter, Michael Porter Jr. Basically benches Bones for doing that stuff. I don't care, to be
quite honest. It kind of worked, though. Wasn't he undefeated? Adelman might have been undefeated.
I think it was 2-1. And which is good for an interim coach, right? And it better than what's his name, Popeye Jones last year, you know. And obviously that's okay. I mean, that didn't bother you, but that was part of the series of events that led up to this point. For the public's perception, this was just a sudden thing, because that Bones leaving the bench was what, 3 weeks ago, and it's just like boom, like that, and then suddenly he's toxic and cannot get off the bench. And I think in that sense, the organization probably should have handled it a little better, but I think they did what they could to keep a distraction not there. But the post part of this is, don't give us chicken shit until it's chicken salad, right? Then that's the problem. There's no way to spin this to make it so we got something. Well, no. Second round picks were being traded like potato chips at a weed convention yesterday. Okay. There is no way you can spend the 2 second round picks are anything but a dump. You can't, you know, unless you got 5, like in the case of a couple players who were traded yesterday for 5 second round picks, you know. It's just, it is what it is. I'm venting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right though. It's a dump. And, sure, there's a lot of turd polishing happening. And maybe, like, again, it's one of those things where 3 years ago, who cares? You know, it's Jokic. Even last year, you know, it's not, the playoffs aren't going to happen. You've got these injuries. Like, you don't need to tinker on the edges. But man, it feels like you should have been able to get at least value of somebody that could conceivably help
Right.
If someone goes down in a series, you know, if someone tweaks an ankle and is out for a few games, the rotation is super, super tight now. It's a good rotation. Mm-hmm. Team's been great. Rotation as it is, it might be enough. And you know, Chris Paul was looking washed last year. KD has had a lot of injuries. Not that I'm hoping for one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his bald head, and like, who knows, right? And Phoenix gave up a lot of their depth. Phoenix bench is not looking, you know, Phoenix bench isn't exactly going to be lighting things on fire either. I'm sure they're going to be staggering KD and Booker though. But so you know, it's not as if like, oh, all is lost. Oh, you know, and so that's why this is not really comparable to Murray's ACL injury, right? I mean, I think
right,
that
right.
They're still number two in the West when it comes to betting odds. And I think that, you know, basically, if you look at the West right now, you probably put Phoenix, Memphis, Golden State, and us in a bowl. And, you know, maybe Phoenix has, you know, a few more ping pong balls, and maybe Memphis and Golden State have a couple fewer, but it's pretty close, right? Like, it's right. I think that anyone that told me I'm from the future and one of those four teams won the West, I would think that's realistic. I'm not really seeing it after that. So, you know, they're still in this in a way that they haven't really been ever. I mean, literally ever, right? Right. That's the thing that's so fucking frustrating. Can I reveal one other thing about myself and Nug Life to you?
Go ahead.
It's almost unbelievable. Maybe a week ago, I just woke up one morning and I was looking at the standings and I was like, man, thank God. I had this thought in my head, and I sent a voice message to my brother about this. I was like, thank God that Brooklyn kept it together, you know, because I'm just really thinking right now, like, the biggest threat to us not winning the West is Brooklyn just blowing it up, and like, they're in fourth and they're close enough. And so it's just like, boy, we got lucky with that. I swear to you, Jeff, it was like 3 hours later that Kyrie trade demand happens. I was like, it was the biggest jinx in the history of jinxes. I'm a human jinx. An old boss used to call me the cooler. So I have a long history of jinxes, but I mean, I've never had anything like that happen to me in my life. So as much as Bones is responsible, as much as Calvin and Malone maybe could have, you know, done a little bit better, I also feel responsible, and so that guilt is weighing on me in this conversation. Well, just, I mean, so you know, I apologize.
Psychic guilt is we don't acknowledge that on the Morecast. You don't need to you don't need to acknowledge that, because quite frankly, the Nuggets don't need that. It just happens to them. I mean, there's no one cause. It's just part of the organization. I will say this though, and I did to bring this back to some positivity.
Yeah.
As I got a little, and I apologize because I just get frustrated. I'm gone back to fan Jeff, and yeah. I am. And anyone who's listening to this, you're hearing the fan. You know, I still have people who talk to me all the time within the Nuggets and without the Nuggets and all over the NBA. I get it. And, but I am no longer media. I'm not there. And that does give me a little bit more freedom to be the bitchy Nuggets fan I always was.
And we deserve a moment to just vent our fan frustrations, you know? Right. I mean, God, it's been long enough. Can't we just have nice things? Can't we just have a fucking winner, you know?
Right.
It's painful. It's painful. But I'm hoping my other positive is it will be like, I just keep telling myself, like, man, beating the Suns would just be so ripe. I don't know that I have a level of hate. Like, as you get older, you know, I've got a child now. You can never recapture the hate for teams that you had as a child, you know? And mm-hmm. like my hatred for those Red Wings teams you know, when I was in middle school and the Avs and Red Wings were in that rivalry, my hatred for like Yzerman and all those assholes was just pure as white Colombian cocaine. I mean, it was just pure as the snow, right? Like my hatred for them ran deep, and there was no, you know, I didn't think about them as humans, or, you know, right. I didn't think about the life journey. I just loathed them. I'm pretty close to recapturing that for the Sun Squad. You know, you have a fucking mortgage lender that buys the team for $4 billion. Like, it's like, it's not like you created anything of any wealth or anything good. It was for society. Like, you're a fucking mortgage lender. You somehow have made $4 billion. You bought this team from a racist piece of shit, and now you've got like dirty CP3 and Durant demanding his trade from the third fucking time he's tried to move himself to a fancier team because he couldn't do it on his own, and Booker his Kardashians. I mean, my hate level for the Suns is getting to like a nice place. So that's a little bit. I know that might not seem like a silver lining, but it is, because, you know, yeah. That if we were to be successful, the joy level, I think, would be higher than it might have been otherwise.
Well,
it was hard for me to build up this hate against the Steph and the Ja and the Pels, you know, like, right. That when, you know, that though it was hard for me to kind of build that up, but for the Suns, no, my hate will be there.
Well, I'll tell you this, on the good side of this, my friend, is that the Suns gave up all their defense. In the trade, they gave up Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, who, by the way, was the reason that Jay Crowder was sitting.
Right.
Which is
now they both can trade together.
Now
I wish we could have got Cam. That's another example, by Cam the way, Johnson? Of something they could have done on the edges. Could we have snuck him back? Man, that would have been nice. Oh, you know, gosh. From the Suns, from the Nets. They don't need all those guys, all those wings. But anyway.
Well, yeah, what are they going to do with all these? I mean, they got nothing but wings now. I mean, that's the weirdest
thing. Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. They're tanking is what they're doing. So on the flip side of this, you were talking about hate. I used to hate the Jazz like that in the mid-90s Jazz. Oh, I couldn't stand them and their sanctimonious fans. I just could not stand them. And it's nice to have a team that you can't stand again. And like the Suns are like that. And to be honest, a lot of the NBA hates the Phoenix Suns right now. Yeah. So, and I think a lot of it has to do with Chris Paul. But it's like, sure. I'll take that. And quite frankly, to spin this back to positive, where my mind frame at is now, Mr. Miller.
Yeah.
Is, look, the Nuggets are in a position where they have to tough it out. There was no miracle pill to get them to where they could be, to have one guy who could guard Kevin Durant or compete with that firepower. There's just nothing, unless they were going to trade Jamal, and people are talking about Mike. Mike does not have that trade value. He has a big contract.
And even if he did, by the way, we need Mike's offense. Like trading Mike for OG, people were saying that yesterday. I was like, you think that's going to be the answer? You know, I don't. OG got so overvalued after a while. I was like, OG can't shut down Durant. So now we're getting a guy who can like maybe slow Durant down a little bit and giving up Mike's offensive firepower. I don't know. I mean, Siakam, come back to me if you're like, okay, if we could have gotten Siakam, then maybe you're talking. Right. There was no move like that.
There was no move. Yeah. With all my frustrations with yesterday, and it was mostly due to the fact that there was the spin afterwards that it was addition by subtraction, and somehow getting 2 second round picks, it was some sort of miracle. The flip side of that is that the Nuggets are in a position where they have to prove it, right? And this keeps with my season of no excuses from before. There's no excuses for anyone on this roster. There's no excuses for Michael Malone. There's no excuses for anyone in the front office. There's no excuses for anyone. This is the team that you are built with, and that who was the number one seed in the West as of February 10th, right? So you got to go out and prove it, and you got to go do it now, and it's not going to be easy. And I think in some way, this is actually going to be beneficial for the Denver Nuggets. As much as I was worried about the Durant thing, this will actually, I think, be benefit as opposed to yesterday, which was them sleepwalking through Orlando. I think they can do it. And because their next game is against a obviously tanking Charlotte team. Okay, good. Get back on the winning beam there. You'll be able to rack up some wins before the All-Star break. And you know what? Second part, or the little bit of the schedule after the All-Star break, we'll see what happens. And if the Nuggets can maintain that first seed, I like their chances because they are really fucking good at home. And if they are able to keep that and have that advantage throughout the playoffs, I think I'm still give the Nuggets great chance to make the finals.
Yeah, and the Suns are 8 games back, so it's like you'd have to really, really tank to drop below them. So you're really looking at the Grizzlies. Grizzlies, you know, added Luke Kennard, which was a nice little add on the margins, just a little shooting. But okay, so maybe, you know, you have to worry about them, but you might get into a situation if they don't, you know, sleepwalk through this next month like they did in Orlando, where you're keeping guys fresh also for the playoffs, right? And so, I mean, that's a best case scenario, and you know, where you've got a lot of miles getting put on, you know, the old knees of KD and CP3, so TBD.
Okay, well, I made a promise to not keep Tim for 2 hours, and we're all just under an hour. So before I let you go, sir, you have anything going on with you? Promote anything with you? Because, you know, you do about 9 podcasts and you write, you know, a column, and you do this Not My Party thing. Is there anything else you're doing?
No, I've got a lot of hats, but yeah, no, come hang out at the Bulwark, download our podcasts, you know, like our YouTube page. It always helps. All that stuff helps. I've got the Next Level podcast on the YouTube. We're going to start doing that maybe 2 times a week. I might start doing interview shows. So stay tuned for that. And I'm just, you know, I've got a lot of league pass ahead of me. I'm going to be doing a lot of mental prep. I'm hoping that this doesn't. My father was like, ooh, does this change your plans for when you're coming to Denver? Because I was, you know, telling him I wasn't coming to the Western Conference Finals. He's like, you know, I don't know now. They might, you might have to come in an earlier round. And I was like, don't you be negative. Like, I'm still not coming back to the Conference Finals. And the other silver lining with this is the Nuggets odds have gotten a little better again since the Suns leapfrogged them. And I've been putting money on Nuggets against various Eastern Conference opponents and for the finals, and the orders to hopes that one of them hits as a payday, which I can then repurpose for tickets to kind of come back to Denver for the finals. So I'm hoping to be in Denver a bunch. We can hang out, get some beers with the listeners of the Mortcast, and you know, on a sunshinier day, you know, once the Nuggets have turned the corner and age and the actuarial tables have come for Chris Paul and Kevin Durant, God willing.
You say we should meet up, but there's a curse between us. So I
there is a curse.
Tim and I have tried to meet many times, and something has happened every single time. But this will actually happen, because I'm you know, like, forget just everything else that has gone on. The basic fact is we have a Nuggets team who is that I think this is the latest they have ever been the number one seed ever in their history, aside from their ABA years. This is the first time. And that in itself makes this team different. That in itself makes this team unusual and better. So fingers crossed.
There's the old Phil Jackson line about the real contenders. You know that? The teams that win 40 before they lose 20.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that is a short list this year. That's going to be the Celtics, the Bucks, and hopefully the Nuggets, as long as they, you know, win 2 before they lose 2 here. And you know, maybe you lump the Suns into that. So it's Jokic's been magical. So it's gonna we're gonna blue skies ahead, Jeff. We're just dropping the negativity about the trade deadline. Blue skies from here. We got it all out, it's on record. And you know, we didn't trade Rudy Gobert for five picks for Rudy Gobert.
We did not.
You know, things could be worse. Sorry, Tim.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to call this the Vent Cast, and we're going to, I'll put this up. So anyway, thanks to Mr. Miller here. appreciate for his I think it's triannual at this time, because you're on at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and end of the year.
We'll see you in the playoffs.
So we'll get it in the playoffs. So anyway, thank you all for listening in, and I'll be back next week with another episode. Goodbye.